Ladies and gentlemen, in just a few moments, we start our daily broadcast.
Who listens to radio?
Hi, I'm Dave Denton. I'm a radio guy, and even went by that name on the air in Missouri. This is Radio Guy Reflections. Hi, everyone. Once again, it's Dave Denton. This is Radio Guy Reflections. And in Radio Guy Reflections, I take the time to talk to people that have been, like me, behind the microphone, and they've been there either a short time or a long time. We're going to be talking to people that have been in the business a long time. They're either retired from the business or maybe doing a show right now at radio stations all over the country. And it's all brought to you by my website, daysvoiceworks.com. And when you spell works, it's W-O-R-X, daysvoiceworks.com, with samples of my air work and also narrations and commercials. But more importantly, there's some free stuff on there like my podcast, where we have Radio Guy Reflections, also the 3W News, and Turnbuckle Trash, where I talk with some friends about one of my favorite subjects, professional wrestling. But also one of my favorite subjects is talking about radio. And we're going to talk to Jim Sharon right now in Texas. Jim, a longtime radio vet. We have a kind of a similar background because we started really young. But first of all, Jim, I want to thank you for joining us on Radio Guy Reflections.
Oh, it's my pleasure, Dave. I'm retired and don't have anything better to do.
But, you know, being retired can be pretty good sometimes, can't it, Jim?
It can, yeah. Every day. Saturday.
Well, I got hooked up with Jim through Steve Sellers, who joined us on our last podcast, and he said you had some great stories. But before we get into some of the stories, I want to find out a little bit more about you. Jim, you're in the San Antonio, Texas area, if I'm right now. Is that right?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. Well, where were you born and where were you raised? In what part of the country?
Well, I was born and raised and was there for first 18 years of my life, all in the same place. It was West Central Illinois, a little place called Beardstown. It's right on the Illinois River, about halfway between Chicago and St. Louis.
So are you a Cub fan or are you a Cardinal fan?
Neither one. I don't like baseball that much.
See, I'm a Cardinal fan. I'm a big Cardinal fan.
My cousin Evelyn would love you. She's a huge Cardinal fan, but I was more of a Bears fan when I was growing up.
Well,
you know?
I can appreciate that because I like them Bears myself. So, yeah. So Jim, you were telling me just a few minutes ago that you got started in radio at an early age. You were in high school. How did that come about? And when did this all happen? Because, man, you know, you were working morning radio as a teenager. That's incredible. Yep.
Well, it was, you might say I had my foot in the door. I'm a drummer, and I was playing drums with a little jazz quartet that I was filling in for their regular drummer, and working with him, I joined this little quartet for like the summer months, one year when this guy had to be gone. It could have been the summer, more like the winter, okay. Mm-hmm. Anyway, the piano player was a guy named Byron. Trumpet player was a guy named Charlie. And bass player was a fellow named Burl, who happened to be the general manager of the local radio station.
Oh.
And he had a jazz show on that he recorded on Wednesdays, played it back on Saturdays. And he was impressed by my knowledge of the big bands. Well, my parents had big band records, and that's how I learned how to play drums, playing along with them. And he had me on a show one Wednesday night. We recorded, and show played on Saturday. I listened to it. I thought, well, who the heck is that? And then a couple of days later, he called me and said, hey, can you stop by the office? I said, sure. I thought he had a gig lined up or something, so I walked in and said hi to the secretary, knew her, you know, just walked right past her and into his office, which is right there at the front of the building. And he was on the phone. I walked in and sat down and put my feet up on his desk and leaned back. 15-year-old cocky drummer.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And then you got the job then, huh?
Well, he got off the phone and he looked at me. He didn't say hi or anything. He just said, "How would you like to work here?" That's when I took my feet off his desk.
And you were still in high school when all this was going on?
Yeah. I was in my junior year. Uh-huh. Uh-huh. I graduated in 64. Uh-huh. So my junior year, I started off on the weekends doing Saturday and Sunday stuff. It's an AM daytimer.
Right.
So it started off about 6 o'clock every day. And he just liked the way I was progressing, doing things. And he was tired of doing it. He did the morning show, and he was tired of doing it. So he said, "How would you like to get up and come work here before school? And I'll take off at 8:30 and go to school, and then come back in the afternoon at 4 o'clock and take the shift from 4 until sign-off." Mm-hmm. I said, "Yeah, I guess I can do that. I'm going to have to drop football, though."
Oh, yeah. But the girls like that disc jockey voice a little bit better than that football guy, huh?
They don't like the voice I've got now. It's trust me, it used to sound a lot better than this. But that's how I got started. And later on, the owner of the station, a guy named Woody Sudbrink, I don't know if you know that name or not, but he later on became one of the major market holders of beautiful music stations.
Uh-huh.
He started in Wood River, Illinois, which is just a suburb of St. Louis, doing it down there. And then he started buying stations around the country because he was such a success with the St. Louis operation.
Mm-hmm.
And he had used the Schulte format. Don't know if you've heard of that.
Yeah, I have, yeah.
That was the premier beautiful music thing. And that's how he made all of his money. And he was an insurance salesman and owned his own agency there in Beardstown. And so that was my guy who signed my paychecks.
So what was the format of that station you were working at? Was it the beautiful music, or did you do another type of format?
It was a true MOR. We had 45s and albums and all different kinds of stuff. We didn't play any rock, but the top of the hour started off with a big band song,
mm-hmm.
followed by a male vocal, followed by a small instrumental group like a trio quartet, followed by a vocal group, followed by a big band song. By then, you should have been to the half hour and start over again.
Mm-hmm.
So, and it was all kinds of music, Frank Sinatra, Nat King Cole, early Barbra Streisand, Nancy Wilson.
Nancy Wilson, yeah.
Yeah, loved her. Yeah, stuff like that, Four Freshmen. I was a huge Four Freshmen fan.
Oh, yeah, the great stuff.
Yeah, I saw him in concert several times and interviewed him once, and over in the Philippines. And then the guy who was playing guitar with him at the time lives here in San Antonio. And I think he passed away because he was getting pretty old. A guy named Bill Comstock. And I had met him somewhere before. And I said, "Remember our conversation at the bar in the Officers Club in the Philippines?" And he said, "No, I don't." played a lot of those guys, and it was just a fun format. But in the morning, in a rural area like that, you had to play to everybody. So mm-hmm. after that male vocal, usually about 10 after 6, I'd have to read the Hog Market reports.
I've been there and done that, and the grain futures and all that.
Yeah. But it was the only radio station in 3 counties and at the time, and we made the most of it,
mm-hmm.
A lot of fun there. When I graduated from high school, my senior year, Woody talked to me, and he had a thing about needing first-class engineers. So he sent me to Chicago to Elkins, mm-hmm. and I was at Elkins a couple of months, and walked away with my first class license, which was a valuable thing to have at the time when you're working in AM radio. Mm-hmm.
So, and Jim, when you were working during, like you said, you were at a true MOR station, but when did you start feeling as maybe a radio person that little bit of, the rock and roll was really starting to take off in that era of the 60s? I mean, the era of Nat King Cole went into maybe some more Ricky Nelson, and then you were starting to get into the softer Beatles. And then how would your radio station react if someone wanted you to play something like, Yesterday by the Beatles or something like that? Was the ownership of the radio station okay with that?
You know, we didn't have a problem with that, but if it was I Feel Fine or something like that, different deal. I just enjoy music, period, all kinds of music. And I play drums, but I also play guitar, and I taught myself how to play keyboard a little bit. And I bought that book, Piano for Dummies. It works.
Well, it wouldn't work with me. I'm too dumb. But, I got to agree, music is great. I mean, in my record collection, in my music collection, I've got everything from Nat King Cole to Artie Shaw up to heavy metal rock and roll like Guns N' Roses, Jackal, and Ozzy Osbourne. I grew up in that era where I really appreciated, Dean Martin. I love Dean Martin, but I also can get down with some AC/DC. I'm sure that's probably not your kind of thing, but I'm kind of interested in seeing how over the years that the music changed for you as a radio announcer. Did it change over the years? Did you ever get into that rock and roll format?
Well, I never did. I did once, and that was a weird occasion. We're missing one radio station. I wanted to kind of go in order.
Okay.
Woody had built an AM station in Bloomington, Illinois, actually Twin Cities of Bloomington Normal. Mm-hmm. They say if you lived in Bloomington, you were near Normal. And it was right across the street from the very first Steak and Shake that was ever built.
Oh, I love Steak and Shake.
It was on the main street of town, and it was halfway between Illinois Wesleyan College and Illinois State College. Mm-hmm. Constant traffic bias, and we had picture windows on the control room, the newsroom, production room. You could drive your car, stop at the stoplight there, and you could say hi to somebody, and they'd honk the horn wave at you.
That's when radio was great. That sounds like fun, man.
But the music was similar there. That was probably my MOR WKRP. Uh-huh. We had that kind of a staff there. Just a bunch of different guys, good stuff. Moving on, decided I didn't want to be drafted and go to Vietnam, so I joined the Air Force. Mm-hmm. And I was in the Air Force from 1966, February to 1969. I got out just before, right around December 1st. And had one tour of duty overseas and one in the States. Overseas, I was what's called a non-Morse intercept operator. We kept track of shipping traffic, stuff like that. And then when I went back, they said, well, you've done really well here. We'll give you, a choice of three or four assignments here. And I said, okay. And one of them was an instructor at the school that I went to go there. And so I took that and went to San Angelo, Texas, and was an instructor there. And lo and behold, in San Angelo, there was a station, another MOR station that sounded like the stations I worked at before. And I went there and knocked on the door, and the program director was a retired Air Force guy. And he said, what kind of experience you had? And I told him. He said, well, we need somebody on the weekends. When can you start? So a day this led into another thing where I worked the weekends for a little bit, and then all of a sudden, I'm doing 6 to midnight, Monday through Saturday, 6 days a week. Mm. Yeah. And what really changed was when my Air Force time was up, I had been in touch. Woody said, give me a call when you're ready to get out and I'll find something for you. I'm going to have some radio stations, I'm sure. And and I'll have something for you. So I called him about a month ahead of time before I got out, and he said, well, let me look here. He said, I got a station. I'm just putting the final sale on here in Pasadena, Texas, suburb of Houston. And I got a station in Miami, Florida. Well, I had gotten married in San Angelo, and my wife's folks and some relatives were all there in San Angelo, and I just couldn't move her away from Texas, so I took one in Houston, and we moved there and went on the air with a beautiful music format early in 1970. And that's the first big change in music that I'd experienced. You know, mm-hmm. I had to kind of learn that format and learn to keep my mouth shut. So.
Right. Yeah, my mother loved that beautiful music format. I grew up in Memphis, Tennessee, and we had a beautiful music station, and she and I would fight over, you know, if we're going to listen to Mantovani or Henry Mancini, but I was wanting to listen to The Temptations or Bachman Turner Overdrive, you know. And but I, you know, I grew to appreciate the beautiful music format, and actually it helped me out later in my career when I had, you know, a little split program and I had to do a little show of that type of music for a couple hours every week at one of the radio stations.
Let me ask you something, Dave. Okay. Do you remember all letters of that station?
Oh, I believe it was WEZI.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that was why, because I know it used easy in its call letters.
That was one of Woody's stations.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Well, we were going on vacation 1 year, driving north to Illinois, and I knew the program director there, and mm-hmm. he said, stop and see me when you're coming through. I'll buy you dinner. So we checked into a nice hotel there at Memphis and went to a nice dinner and went and showed me the station, how they ran things, and a nice adventure. But yeah, he had stations in Baltimore, Chicago, Phoenix, San Diego, and quite a few of them. What he would do is he would get the station on the air, knew the format was going to be popular, just, you know, because it was new. Mm-hmm. And he'd build the profits up and everything, and where it looked really good on paper, and then he'd flip it.
Yeah. Hey, got to make money.
He told me that's what he was going to do. And he said, so if you go to work in Houston, it might just be for a few years, and making some money, I'll flip you. And I said, okay, I'll take my chances, Woody. Mm-hmm. And sure enough, I went from doing the overnights there, because they'd already hired pretty much full staff. And he said, there's bound to be one of these guys that won't work out. You get off that all night shift. And sure enough, it was the morning guy.
Oh, wow.
So I went from all nights to mornings, and just a quick step like that. But I enjoyed the music. I enjoyed the nice break you had between station breaks, you know. Mm-hmm. But you had to be very precise, very correct on everything. And they were, the Shokie people were really prudish, you know. Mm-hmm. They wanted everything to be gentle on the listener, nothing to upset them. And they didn't even like you to run PSAs for the blood bank.
Oh, really?
Blood was a negative, you know.
Wow. So you were in Pasadena, the Houston, Texas market for a while. And yeah. did you jump around Texas or jump around the country? Format?
Yeah, when eventually I became program director there, and probably a year or so after that, it was time to sell it. He called me and said, I'm going to sell it. I said, okay. And he said, would you like to go to Baltimore and be program director there? I said, well, it's a sure thing. I guess so. And so I went off to Baltimore, and I was there for 9 months, Dave. Hated it.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it was wonderful, all the history that's up there, and totally different change of scenery from Texas for sure. But the people just were too different too for us.
Yeah,
you weren't part of the people unless you were born and raised there. So you always kind of felt on the outside.
Yeah, that makes it kind of tough when you go in and you know, for some reason you don't feel comfortable, and that makes it really tough.
I had talked to the PD back there in Houston. We used to talk all the time, and he said, "You know, Southern Broadcasting was really upset when you left." And I said, "I didn't know that." I said, "You want me back?" He said, "What, you don't like it there?" I said, "Sucks." So he said, "When can you be here?" I said, "2 weeks." So Memorial Day weekend in 1973 or 4, I think it was, I returned to Houston. And did do the morning show. And the guy who was the PD, a fellow named Tom Sanders, he was a great guy, liked him a lot. He went off to California to work at the beautiful music station out there a couple of years after I came back. So I'm PD again. And the next sale that came along looked a little rough, like they were going to change the format. I wasn't ready for that.
Mm-hmm.
And the guy who was a salesman for the AM station that Southern Broadcasting owned, KULF. I was in touch with him too because he sold for our station too.
Mm-hmm.
And he was a general sales manager of a station here in San Antonio. And we were talking one day and he said, you never know what they're going to do when they buy that station. I said, "Yeah, I know." He said, "Why don't you come over to San Antonio and meet the general manager here, and I'll take you to lunch Saturday." And so I drove over and he showed me the station, introduced me to the GM, talked to him a little bit, and then we went to have lunch at a place called Hip's Bubble Room.
Uh-huh.
It was decorated like Christmas every day. And back in the days when they were shooting Viva Max, starring Jonathan Winters, that was his favorite hangout. They had pictures of him all over the place.
Wow.
So, I felt right at home there.
Well, you said Jonathan Winters. And that's one of my favorite guys. What a great talent. Man alive.
I did a thing that a lot of us probably would like to do. Maybe a few of us don't. I don't know. I'll just have to ask you. Did you ever undress in front of a dog? I'll tell you. You think about that for a minute. I don't know, people, you know, it's funny, a bird somehow doesn't count, right? Or a cat. But a dog, they really stare.
I would love to have had a chance to meet him.
Yeah. I just enjoyed listening to him. I owe a couple of his records, and they were just about worn out by the time I was done listening to him.
Mm-hmm.
But, I got over here and they had a Bonneville Beautiful Music format, and I worked for that company for a couple of months, and then I went over to KQXT. Well, the company I was working for was WOAI-FM, and I could tell they weren't into the format that much. And when they changed it to KJ97, and they were doing country and western.
Mm-hmm.
So you talk about a shock for the listener. That was probably. I went to work for KQXT, and the management there was nice, friendly, easygoing, not pushy about anything. Had good hours doing the morning show. Even had a guy who wrote my news for me, it was a good deal. And later on, couple of years down the road, Westinghouse bought the station.
Mm-hmm.
And Dave, I got to tell you, if you've ever worked for Westinghouse, you know that's the Cadillac of operations.
Wow.
I've never seen. The guy they chose to be the GM was also a guy who worked at that AM station in Houston, where Don worked, my friend. And he was in there making a speech one day. The day that he showed up, they brought a controller in from out of town somewhere and a few other people, and he'd already hired a promotions girl. And then he said, we're gonna take this format and do something with it. And my ears perked up, and I said, and a couple of days later, he came to me and said, I want you to be the program director. Can you do the morning show too for a while? I said, yeah, sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you get paid? Yeah, I'll do it.
And Westinghouse, they just did everything right. It was incredible. I helped develop a format that we were calling ASR, which is the best in vocals and then the best in cover instrumentals.
Oh, okay.
And instrumentals like Take Five. And we didn't want the drum solo that's in the middle of Take Five. And a couple of the other PDs were trying to cut it out in the production room, and they couldn't get it. And I said, I'll take a stab at it. I went in the production room and came back out, and I made a perfect cut on it. Being a drummer, I knew that I had to count to five instead of four.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, it's flawless.
That's a real talent, because dealing with splicing of tape, which you were doing at the time, I was okay at it, but I never got good at it, you know? So I admire you for that.
A lot of times you just close eyes and you had to feel it, you know?
Uh-huh.
Hit that stop button when you felt it was right. I did a lot of production. I liked working with sound. Did some helped out with some community theater sound work and finally wound up on stage.
Wow.
Did about a dozen or two dozen, more like two dozen shows from about 1984 to 1994, about a 10-year period.
Mm-hmm.
I did Chicago. I played Amos Hart in that. And did Band of La Mancha, you know, these big musicals, and did a drama called Lone Star, which was a fun one.
Mm-hmm.
And worked with the guy. That was a fun deal.
So you're a Renaissance man. You're an engineer. You're a program director. You're an announcer, an actor, and a musician. That you got some talent there, Jim. I'm impressed, man.
And there was a contest to raise money for muscular dystrophy.
Uh-huh.
at the Comedy Store here in San Antonio. And they were having a disc jockey stand-up comedy thing. And a bunch of us entered it. And we were supposed to do 15 minutes of stand-up comedy. And it was an elimination thing. Every week they eliminate a couple of people. And finally it got down to the final four, which I was in, of course.
Mm-hmm. And, yeah. That's and, awesome.
Yeah. And the manager of the club, he said, remember, when you see that red light blink, you got 5 minutes. And when that blue light comes on solid, your time's up. Get off stage. I said, okay. So I'm up there doing my stuff, and I made a mistake. Started talking to a couple of girls in the front row.
Mm-hmm.
And got off track, and finally got back into the groove, doing my bits and stuff. And at one point, I had two bits left to do, and I looked up at that wall, and that light was on blue, and I'm thinking, God, how long was it blue? And I said to myself, I said, you got to do that final bit, which was a thing where you took somebody out of the audience and had them hold a shot glass.
Mm-hmm.
While you're explaining, this is going to be an aerodynamic thing, and I just wanted her to hold the shot glass while I did the experiment. He said, okay. So you take the shot glass and you set it on a little table, and she's holding it, and I fill it full of water. Oh, and some of it flops over the edge a little bit. And then I take half an Alka-Seltzer and pop in there. And following that, I put a condom over it. And you can imagine what happened.
Oh, yeah.
I want to tell you, I'd never heard people laugh so loud in my life. And the thing is, I did that every show. And it worked perfectly every time. And on the last show I did it, when I spilled the water over the edge, I made the side slick. When that thing got all the way up there, it shot off up in the air. And I reached out and grabbed it.
Oh, man. Yeah, the crowd would love that. Especially if they had a few drinks in them, right?
Yeah. I did one that called the, you know, they had the Tidy Bowl Man.
Uh-huh.
Well, I said, what if your toilet could talk? And I did the talking toilet, you know, and it's the toilet talking to this single guy who comes home after he's been drinking and eating at Taco Bell and stuff like that. It just gets gross, really. I finished that night, and a guy who wrote for the newspaper, a fellow who's out in California now, he writes a column for some paper out there, Michael O'Rourke. He was an up-and-coming stand-up comic, and he came over to me and he said, hey, can I buy that talking toilet bit from you?
Oh, wow.
I'm thinking, oh, for crying out loud, this has never happened to me.
Uh-huh.
So I said, you know, I'm still working on it, so maybe after I get it developed and all that stuff. Mm. I was telling this at a party one day where there were some other jocks, and one of the guys who was a contestant was there at the party. He said, hell, Jim, I've been stealing that for 10 years.
Oh, that's hilarious, Jim.
Reflections. Past episodes of Radio Guy Reflections can be heard on Spotify, Google Podcast, Pocket Cast, Breaker, Radio Breaker, and Acre. Thanks for listening to Radio Guy Reflections.
I got a question for you. Because you talked about, you know, working beautiful music, and then you helped develop this ARS format. But that, I mean, when you're talking about doing stand-up, how did that work with your own air delivery? Did you do comedy on your morning show, or was it more just more relaxed like you did with the the beautiful music?
It was a little more subtle than the slap them in your face thing I, you know, do out in public.
Right.
You know, it's a little more subtle. There's a good example of the funniest interview I ever did. Everybody who came to town to be in a play at the Majestic Theater, you know, I interviewed them because we had a good deal going with them as far as PR goes. We were, you know, the classy station, and they were bringing in classy acts and stuff. I also worked a lot with San Antonio Symphony Pops Orchestra and introduced a lot of their stars, you know. I did a lot of MC work, you know. Tom Jones was coming to town one year, and he had to cancel. And a couple of years later, he was coming back, and he happened to have four dates open. So he sold out the Majestic Theater for four nights in a row, and I MC'd the shows. So, fun stuff.
Being in front of a crowd is really a little bit different than being behind the microphone, isn't it?
Yeah, not everybody can do it.
Right.
I took to it like a duck to water. You know, when we were doing plays, there'd be people backstage gagging and throwing up and saying, I don't know my lines and stuff like that. And I'm saying, when's this going to start? Let's go. Let's get out there. I wanted to go do it. Same thing with, you know, some of the people backstage, you know, they get nervous. Best one I ever had was I was introducing Wayne Newton one night. He was doing some kind of a charity for an animal shelter that was taking care of some kind of rare monkey. And I walked out there and I stood on the stage for a while and I took the mic and I said, well, I said, I know I always start my little introductions here with a joke, but I said, I got no jokes for these monkeys. First, off stage, I heard this huge laugh, and I looked over, was waiting to just die and laughing. He came out and hugged me as he was going on to do his.
Incredible. So, did you spend most of the rest of your career in the San Antonio market?
Yeah. The station Westinghouse eventually sold the station to Clear Channel, and by that time we had totally evolved away from the tapes and everything. Mm-hmm. Everything was on cart. All the music was on cart, and it was all programmed on a computer to build nice little up and downs and tempos, even key changes. Mm-hmm. They brought in their own PD, and they still let me stay and do the morning show. I've been doing it so long. Mm-hmm. And the general manager didn't like anybody. And he fired a couple of people when they first came on, I think just to show that he could. And I was wondering when the hammer was going to drop on me. Mm-hmm. Well, that was about 1994, 95. Anyway, I lasted until Labor Day of 99 when he finally called me into his office and said, this is it. He said, you've been sounding kind of complacent lately. I said, lately? I said, hell, we ought to have fired me 2 years ago.
I bet he liked that one, didn't he?
Yeah. And I just didn't feel like doing radio anymore. I'd done it for 37 years and mostly the morning show, so I was... Just had a heck of a time getting off, waking up at 4 o'clock in the morning, you know.
Mm-hmm. So, Jim, if you don't mind, if I can get just a little personal, you mentioned your wife. I'd like to know how you met your wife and how long you were married before she passed away.
Oh, well, we met in San Angelo. I was a member of the Elks Club, thanks to my dad, who was an elk up in Illinois. And I joined up there so I could go to any of the clubs. Got a nice one in San Angelo. And I was in there at the bar talking to the bartender one night, 5 o'clock. And a lot of people came in there after work for a drink. And 1968, I think it was. Anyway, I was playing this little game with the wheel. You know, you put a nickel out and bet on different numbers coming up. And they were playing too, and we were the only three people sitting at the bar. And so my future wife got up and left to go to the bathroom. The lady she was with was an older lady and very loud when she talked. She reached over and she grabbed my arm, David. She said, "She's a nice girl. You ought to ask her out." What the heck? It's okay. And I said, "Well, I was planning to." And she said, "Good."
That's awesome.
So that's how it all started. And we got married the next year. And we were married for 52 years. Wow. Last year. Married May 7th, 1969.
Wow. And she moved all over the country with you then.
Oh, yeah.
That's awesome.
Bless her heart. One of the things I loved about her, she never, well, she complained a little bit, you know, but she always hung with me.
Well, that's incredible. And I realize she passed away last year. My condolences there. But it is nice when, and I consider myself one of those lucky guys that I married my best friend and my the love of my life. And we're getting ready to celebrate our 27th anniversary later this month. And I just love hearing those good stories about husband and wives, especially in an industry that's a little bit tough on marriages at times.
It is. You know, most of the people I knew were divorced or something, and that was kind of sad. But if you want a good laugh, you can Google my name, J-I-M-S-H-A-R-O-N, and Tim Conway's name. Google those two names together, and you will get a story about my funniest interview.
Oh, cool.
Along with a picture. It's in a book about radio stories in San Antonio. And I wrote it up and sent it in, and they loved it, put it printed.
So. Well, we'll put a link onto our Facebook page about that, too, also. So you got to meet the great Tim Conway?
Yes, I did, and I'm going to give something away. For the entire interview, he sat on my lap. Of course, radio, but I could see he sitting on my lap. But it was, he came in right when my last record for the interview started. We talked quickly for a minute, and the guest chair was gone from the studio where he was supposed to sit. I said, well, we'll get one in a minute, or you can sit on my lap. He walked around the corner and came over and sat on my lap. And I swiveled around, he sat on my lap, and I swiveled back and hit the mic, and I said, KQXT, 101.9 FM, we're talking to Tim Conway today, star of, what was it?
Carol Burnett Show?
I was at this freak show one time, and I saw these Siamese elephants. They was joined at the end. They was joined at the end of their trunks like that. And this trainer make them stand up on their back feet like that, and they had their trunk stretched like that. Then this little monkey had come out. Walk out there and dance a merengue right out there. I kind of felt sorry for them. They couldn't go like the other elephants when they go. All they could do is just blow and go.
Yeah, well, sorry to tell him that. So the play he was doing.
Oh,
okay. So how are you doing, Tim? And he said, fine. And of course, the promotion people from the Majestic and our promotion girl. We're in the newsroom looking through the plate glass window and couldn't hear him, but I glanced over at him every once in a while. They were in tears. And we were wrapping up the interview, and Tim says, you think we ought to tell the people what we've been doing, Tim? I said, do you think we need to, Tim?
Oh, what a great talent.
Anyway, we repositioned, or we got a position to get in the our PR girl came in and took our picture, and that's in there.
That's
one of my pictures. Yeah,
that's incredible. You know, Tim Conway got his start in radio, but and then he was discovered.
Oh, yeah,
yeah. So he was one of those jocks for a long time. You know, and you know George Carlin, Soupy Sales, and a lot of great comedians got their start in radio. So that's a great story.
I finished watching that George Carlin 4-hour special in two parts. HBO.
Uh-huh.
And yeah, I went to see him early in his career when he came out with 7 words.
Uh-huh.
And I had smuggled a little tape recorder in there, and I was sitting on an aisle seat, and he started to show, you know. And after a few minutes, I was laughing so loud that I went back and listened to that tape, and all you could hear was me laughing. Could hear.
Well, you know, one of the ways I got started was I used to imitate, you know, when he did Wonderful Wino Radio, Wonderful Wino. I used to do that to my friends when I was a teenager, and they said, you already do radio, man. So that's how one of the ways I got started. So.
Hi there, kids. Welcome to the Willie West Show here on Wonderful Wino Radio. Wonderful Wino. Welcome to the Willie West Show here on a wonderful Wednesday with the weird one. It's been a Willie West winging your way with 101 Wild and Willie Wedges of Wax and Quasi Wagons to play on the radio. Right here on Wonderful Wino. Wonderful Wino. 1750 on your dial, just above the police calls, kid.
We sweet the hippy dippy weatherman.
Yeah, que pasa. Yeah.
Now, I imagine that some of you were a little surprised at the weather over the weekend.
Especially if you watch my show Friday night, man. I'd like to personally apologize for the sudden heavy rains to the former residents of Rogers, Illinois.
I love me some George Carlin. And I've watched that special, too, on HBO Max. And anybody that's in radio should watch that because they do a lot of radio stuff in there. They sure do,
right? The first couple of hours, lots of radio in there with Jack Burns, his first partner. Mm-hmm. Went on to work with Avery Shriver, and they were very funny.
Yeah, very funny together.
Yeah.
And didn't he also go on to be part of the Andy Griffith Show, took over for Don Knotts? Wasn't that right?
I don't think so. I don't remember that.
Yeah. I'm getting older. I just celebrated my 65th. Maybe I forget, you know, so.
Well, I got 76 coming up in Sunday, so.
Well, happy birthday to you, too.
Well, thank you very much.
That's awesome. But Steve, your career in radio, you spent a whole lot of it in the beautiful music and kind of the adult formats, and that's a little, you know, that's really cool because it's a little bit different than working pop music, rock and roll, or even, you know, oldies and stuff. And you mentioned earlier in the podcast working rock and roll and it didn't go so well. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
What was that?
You said you worked a rock and roll format one time and you didn't
Yeah. It was strange. it was in Houston, and it was when I was doing the all night shift.
Uh-huh.
There was a PD of a station that was pretty good. They weren't doing great in the ratings, but they were playing classic rock stuff. And he called me, and he said, "This is Johnny Goin." I said, "Hey, Johnny, how you doing?" He said, "Fine. Hey, can we have a lunch Sunday?" I said, "Sure." And he wanted me to go to work there doing middays. Mm-hmm. I said, "I'm on this other station." So, well, see, we didn't use our names then.
Right.
He said, "Yeah, you're on all night at that station. And if I put you on a rock station in the middle of the day, you think anybody's going to notice the difference?" I said, "I don't know." So I talked to PD and he said, "Hey, go for it, you know. Make some extra money." So I did. And shortly after I started, Johnny got fired. The new PD said, "I got to have some loyalty here. And if you, if you're going to work for another station, you can't work here."
Oh.
I said, "Okay, so long." But yeah, I was working a 6-hour shift from midnight to 6 at one station. And then I was doing, middays, 10 to 2 at that rock station.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I was just tired.
Yeah, I did that for about 6 months in central Missouri in a little town called Montgomery City. I would do the morning show, and then I would drive 90 minutes to Columbia, Missouri to Clear 99 and do their 6 to midnight show, and then have to drive back from Columbia to Montgomery City and try to get a couple hours sleep to do the morning show the next day. Man, I tired myself out real quick, but, you know, you got to make some money, you know.
Reminds me of when I was a musician I was in high school. I was a musician playing drums, a little rock and roll band.
Uh-huh.
Working at the radio station. And some nights we'd have a gig on Friday night, you know. And I had to be at the radio station bright and early Saturday morning. And we get done playing at 1 o'clock in the morning, 1:30, something like that. And the time we packed up and got out of there and got home, it was 2 or 3 o'clock, and I was getting up at 5. So
yeah, it's good to be young sometimes when you're doing that, isn't it?
It certainly is. You got to love what you're doing.
Yeah. Well, over the years, you've worked with. I'm sure you've worked with some great people. And when I talked to Steve Sellers, he was so impressed that he said, let me get you hooked up with him. And I really do appreciate that. Who are some of the people that you have worked with that you're still friends with, or maybe, you know, you're still in touch with, and maybe talk about some of those guys and some experiences there?
Oh, there was a guy named Bill Norris that I hired to come and do middays on KQXC. And I had to talk him into it because we weren't paying as much as he was from the East Coast, the Boston area, and I told him what the pay was. He said, I can't do anything. This guy had a great voice, perfect for the format. And so I took him to lunch at Hip's Bubble Room. And I said, Bill, you don't understand. What are you going to pay for a house in Boston? He said, oh, I couldn't afford to buy a house there. I said, how'd you like to buy a house in San Antonio? Well, sure. You can, you know, with what you're making, no problem. So I turned him around a little bit, and he's back on the East Coast now. I think he's in the Raleigh-Durham area. I talked to him once in a while, and he's a good fellow. Who else? This guy, Tom Sanders, that was PD of the station in Houston for a while. He and I became good friends, and he bought a station in Missouri, right across the river. Can't think of the town. But anyway, it was right across the river, and I stopped by to see him once, and going up to Illinois, and he joined and had his kid working on the air, and his wife was the secretary, and he was on the air doing commercials and outselling. So he'd always wanted to own a radio station. And that's one of the things I never wanted to do. So.
Well, I made that mistake. I did part ownership at a station in central Missouri in Montgomery City, a little small town. I tell you what, I learned an awful lot, but I also learned to respect what the owners and upper management have to go through just to make paychecks every once in a while. So just a little bit different.
Yeah. It's not easy sometimes. And the other thing about the beautiful music format, nobody seemed to mind if you caught a bad book once in a while. It wasn't like you were living quarterly at each station. You see some guys who every quarter they'd get fired from because they had poor ratings and they'd go someplace else and work. I won't mention his name, but there's a guy here in San Antonio who's a popular guy and everything, but he's worked at almost every station in town.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, over the past 20 years or so. He was in that comedy laugh-off thing, too. But we've got a nice little organization here called the San Antonio Society of Radio Broadcasters, and put in the 2020 San Antonio Radio Hall of Fame, which is a nice honor.
Wow.
And with Westinghouse, I worked with their main program director, or the program director for all the stations in Westinghouse that had the beautiful music format, a guy named Mike Burnett. And he was a sharp guy, very fun to be around with. And before he got into radio, he was a magician, and he's always doing little magic tricks and stuff. And he finally went to Bend, Oregon, and bought a radio station up there. And he was a fine fellow, too.
Now, couple weeks ago when I talked to Steve on our podcast, he told me about that there's a group of you that used to work in San Antonio that get together for breakfast. And I called you earlier this morning, and you were actually with this group. How many times you meet, and how many guys show up?
Let's see. We had me and Steve, Tom Carr, a fellow named Roy Paniagua, who's not a disc jockey, but he's a musician. Mm-hmm. He's probably the premier bass player in town, and he's got a rock band called Raw, and it sounds like a punk group, but it says it's the first initials of their names. It's Roy, Alan, and William. They know everything, and he's a friend of Steve's, and we went to listen to him last week, and they just knocked me out. They were so good. And there's a guy named John Perner who's retired from the Army, helps veterans a lot, so it's a different kind of mix of things. Bob Nielsen, Bob Carlson, He used to be a writer, still writes a little bit. He's written some very funny lyrics that I've heard him do. Once in a while, we take our ukuleles and play.
That's cool. He was great.
He was great, you know. And I get by, but Bob teaches ukulele. So.
Well, that's awesome.
Yeah.
So how often do you guys get together?
Every Wednesday.
Every Wednesday. And I interrupted your breakfast this morning.
I was sitting right next to Tom Carr, and I said, hey, and we were talking about you. He said, has that guy called you yet? I forgot if you had or not, but anyway, he worked at a radio station, that station in Bloomington that I helped build.
Oh, cool. Yeah, I have tried to contact him, but I haven't been able to get with him yet, so...
He worked there in 1977, and he told me the call letters. I said, no, that's not it. Well, they changed the call letters when they sold the station.
Uh-huh.
And it was a station that I helped build and put on the air in 1964.
Uh-huh.
So he worked there all those years later. But, he's a great guy.
Yeah. One of my earlier guests on Radio Guy Reflections was a man named Bob Apoon, who worked in Des Moines, Illinois for most of his early career, and actually helped out with the University of Illinois play-by-play. And he was from the Des Moines area, and talked about the great fairs and all that stuff. I didn't know if you knew Bob or where Des Moines was and all that. So
I do know where Des Moines is, and that name is kind of familiar.
Well, if you ever met Bob, you would know Bob. I worked with him for several years here in Utah, and one of the great guys I've ever enjoyed working with. Well, Tom, I'm messing up, Jim. Jim, thank you so much for joining us. And you know what? I have just enjoyed this so much, and I enjoy talking to people about their lives and also their career in radio, because it was something that, I worked in it since 1974 at high school and just retired last year as a full-time announcer. But it was a great career. I've met some great, incredible people. But I'm wondering if I'm having more fun now talking to people like yourself and finding out these great stories. And I got to tell you, I am so jealous you got to meet Tim Conway, one of my idols. I loved him.
I love funny people. I got to tell you this quickly here.
Sure.
The first station I worked at in Beardstown, the Illinois State Fair is a big deal every year, and they have some good talent that comes in, and they have some not so good talent, but they send them out around the state, within about a 50-mile radius of Springfield, to do interviews at the little radio station, and so I got to interview some people one morning. And it was the Three Stooges.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
My first interview
with the Three Stooges.
Well, you're talking my language there. I love me some Stooges. I'm an old school guy. The Stooges, Little Rascals, Laurel and Hardy. That's some great comedy right there. Just great comedy.
Yeah.
Well, go ahead.
Laughter is, they say laughter is the best medicine, and I truly believe that,
Well, Jim, one more thing I wanted to talk to you quickly, and I wanted to wish you the best. I know that you are dealing with Parkinson's, and you've been dealing with it for several years. How is your health at this point, if you don't mind?
Well, it's a little rocky because Parkinson's seems to take a little out of you, every year it's something different. Right now the arthritis is not too good. But several years ago I had deep brain stimulation done, and that's where they drill some holes in your head, put implants in, and give you a controller, and it stopped my hands from trembling, so I can go and play my guitar again.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That is awesome. Well, we all have our little issues. I had a business partner that he was in his early 40s and developed MS, and it really took him very, very quickly. And then I've also talked to people that have MS on this podcast, Philip Moon, And then I've also dealt with a young couple that do a morning show in New Mexico that their son is severely autistic. And I think that's part of what I wanted to get in this podcast was that, you know, we're regular people, these guys behind the microphone, and we deal with real life issues. And I think that's something that at least I'm enjoying finding out about how we are dealing with getting older, or maybe some of these health issues that we all have to deal with.
Yeah. Yeah, it's, you know, Parkinson's especially, it's just slow. It creeps up on you.
Yeah. Like I told you, my grandmother had Parkinson's, and I remember she was actually in a nursing facility later in her life, and I walked in, and I had grown a pretty big beard, and she reached up, grabbed that beard, twisted it in her little hand, and said, "I hate that thing, shave it off." And I had to get my mother to come over and loosen her hand to get so I could get away from my grandmother.
That was, she just pulled it out.
Yeah, it was great. Well, you know, I want to thank you once again, because this has been an absolute pleasure for me to get to know you a little bit. And I'm hoping that our friends in radio and the people that listen to this, I know we have listeners that, you know, in Arkansas and some in Tennessee and in Texas. I've talked to several people in Texas, not just in San Antonio, but also a TV host who just retired in Houston named Art Rascone, is a good friend of mine. And I just enjoy finding out and talking to other people about their stories, especially when it comes to this, I think, a great career that we all were lucky enough to be in radio. And I once again, I thank you so much.
We need more guys like you.
Well, I hope eventually there'll be more like us, because it is a great industry, and I hope that we'll, you know, that we can find our way to maybe a little bit more personal touch in our industry, because I think that's one of the things we're missing right now.
Yep. You can take all the consultants and march them off a cliff, as far as I'm concerned.
Those who don't can't do, teach, right?
Exactly.
You're a wonderful man. I had just enjoyed this to no end. And, Jim, I wish you more than just the best. And you hang in there and enjoy your breakfast every Wednesday. And you tell Roy and you tell Tom that I will continue to try to get in touch with them and other people that maybe you know in radio, that if they'd like to talk about their career and just have some fun getting to know each other, I'd be happy to talk to them too.
And that's Radio Guy Reflections, a podcast about radio and the people behind the microphone. In future podcasts, we'll look at what makes a successful and sometimes a train wreck of a radio show.
As we say in the radio business, if you put that on the radio, people will listen to it.
We'll talk with people who started in radio and moved on to success in other fields. Radio Guy Reflections. We'll be back soon with another show about radio and the men and women who produce the radio programs you've loved to listen to. Radio Guy Reflections is a production of Dave's Voice Works.